What is going on? It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jorn of the band Bukasa over Zoom video. Jorn was born and raised in Norway in a small town. He said there's only about 5,000 people there when he grew up, so not a whole lot of people playing music. So it wasn't until he went away to high school that he was able to start a band, but comes from not really a musical household per se. His mom played a little piano and had a guitar. So when he was younger, he found his mom's old nylon string acoustic. So he started to learn guitar on that. He talked about the first bands he formed, how he ended up starting Bukasa. He has this amazing story about how Lars of Metallica really broke their band. He somehow stumbled upon their record and played it on his radio show, praised them as one of his favorite new bands, and that really brought Bukasa into the spotlight. That got him a lot of notoriety as far as getting different festivals in Norway, and it also led to the band opening up for Metallica on a massive European tour, playing 25 stadiums with Metallica. Jorn talks to us about being nominated for what is equivalent to a Grammy here in the United States for Norway for Best New Artist. They won another amazing award for their record Molotov Rocktails. And we hear all about their brand new album they just released called All Out of Dreams. You can watch the interview with Jorn on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It'd be awesome if you subscribe to our channel and like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. Also, if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, please rate and review the podcast there. It helps us tremendously. So we would be very, very grateful if you could go do that.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're bringing it backwards with Bukasa. Jorn, I'm Adam, and this is about you and your journey in music. And we'll talk about the album you all just kind of released and kind of the history of Bukasa, if that's cool.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome. Well, first off, Jorn, where were you born and raised?
Well, I was born and raised in, I guess, the easiest place is called Stavanger.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's...
Okay. And, in Norway.
I was going to say, I thought you guys were from Norway. Yeah, I'm so terrible at geography, too. So, right on. So, what was it like growing up there?
I guess it was, like, probably most places in Norway. It's pretty all right. It's like, I remember, yeah, because I remember, like, I think that's why, like, at this age, I'm very, like, fascinated with American culture and stuff like that, because when I was growing up, it was not much of that, you know, because of the Norwegian what's it called, had only one TV channel and stuff
really?
Like that. Yeah. And I remember, like, if you wanted to hear, like, bands, they had like import CDs and stuff. Like
oh,
if
right.
It wasn't the big stuff. And same with movies. They came like often 6 months to a year afterwards. So it's like,
wow.
Yeah. And just forget about all the cool candies that you got. Like now we got some of it, but back then it was just like nothing.
So all of our processed food, man.
I got like a sweet spot for like this really fake American food because we never had it in Norway, you know?
Funny. But you had one television channel. That was it.
Yeah. Until the mid 90s. Then there came another one and like broke the monopoly. Then there came a third one in the 2000s. And then I guess afterwards it exploded and now nobody watches TV anyhow.
So, right. Now it's just all on the internet. So once the internet kind of made a boom, was that when you were able to access more, more bands and everything else? I mean, it sounds like only certain bands got imported into Norway at the time.
I remember, like, I used to pick up a copy now and then of, like, Kerrang or something like that and read about bands. And maybe you go to a record store. And they usually had, like, maybe one like import CD that was much more expensive than other CDs, but they
course.
never kind of had the bands that I wanted. I remember first hearing, probably through Napster, hearing like a song from AFI, and I went to a record store and asked about their like the album The Art of Drowning just come out or something like that. And they didn't have it, but the guy instead he showed me Limp Bizkit. So I was like, no, this is not the same at all.
He's like, these guys are pretty similar.
Yeah. Because in his mind, it was like American rock. Yes, it's kind of the same thing, you know?
Oh, that's funny. So were you trying to get into punk music? I mean, that sounds like something that you were in, and the band has s you know aesthetic of that as well, but was punk kind of a genre that you were interested in early on?
Yeah. It started with like what these big rock bands like Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith kind of there when I was a kid, very small. And then of course, I heard like Offspring and Green Day around 94 with Smashing Dookie. But it wasn't until I heard like Bad Religion, NOFX, Propaganda, all that Epitaph, Fat Wreck, the Dwarves, that kind of scene. When I was around 11, 12, like then I got really into that. And I probably, to be fair, I've been ever since, you know. But also, like some years afterwards, I discovered, like, you know, Slayer, Machine Head, also Stoner rock scene, like Corrosion of Conformity, Monster Magnet, Clutch, kind of Fu Manchu, maybe Clutch a little bit later. But I guess these are like my, at least in the rock, punk, and metal world. My discoveries, like,
Yeah, like your core
outrageous.
bands that you found. I mean,
Yeah,
we I
yeah.
think we're about the same age. I mean, Dookie and Smash were the two albums that really got me into music, and then down the line, the Fat Records bands and
Yeah.
Epitaph bands and all of that. But that's interesting. Like, I'm curious. Like, where did you kind of start your musical like journey? Do you come from musicians in your household or like a creative household? Like, where did you kind of begin as far as like playing a musical instrument?
Well, I guess like my mother, I guess she can play some piano. She had like a keyboard when I was a kid, I think. But she's never been like especially musical. She can play. I think she's never done it a lot. My father does have, he's not creative at all. But I think the creative side probably comes from my mother because she used to paint the whole lot when I grew up.
Oh, wow.
And I knew that she could play some piano, and she had like an old guitar. She probably could play a couple chords. I can't remember, but I remember that's the first guitar I learned on, like this old acoustic guitar. And like my friends who learned guitar, they got like a cheap Stratocaster copy or something. It looked cool. And my mom was like, I remember she told me, she said like Keith Richards, because she apparently read like an interview, and she said Keith Richards learned to play on a nylon acoustic, so why shouldn't you? So I was like, okay, yeah.
Oh, so it was the nylon string as well, the acoustic
Yeah,
guitar.
it was.
Oh,
I
man.
think it was. I think that neck broke at a certain point. It was probably like very cheap old guitar. It was,
But the nylon string, the necks on those guitars are really big too. I mean, how old were you
yeah.
when you started to learn?
I don't know. Maybe if, like, I can't really. I would say like 9, 10,
Wow. To
maybe
get your hand
something.
around that too, I'm sure it wasn't the easiest thing.
I just remember that from an early age, like sure, I like to play some of the songs that I listened to, but I was always just interested in making my own stuff because I didn't really want to rehearse that much to learn other people's stuff. Yeah.
You wanted to write your own music.
Yeah.
Wow. And then did you like when with picking up the guitar, like you said you're fairly young, I mean under 10, and then do you with the songs and stuff you're kind of writing, do you like have a group of friends around you that also were trying to do music, or like how do you start a band, pretty early on, or like where do you kind of go from there?
Well, I come from a very small town. It's like under 6,000 people. I guess back then it was probably under 5,000 people. So it was not a lot of band environment at all. But we, I guess you can probably count it on like that's the amount of people who played in
Played.
bands. Yeah, so it was not really like in a bag. I guess we tried, but we never could find a drummer.
Yeah, that's
There
always the
never
hardest
was
person to
anybody.
find, right?
Yeah, because never anybody had like a drum kit. So maybe you played some at school, but there was never any. That came later when we moved to, it's called Vítagon. I don't know what it's called in English, but maybe it's high school when you
Okay.
move to like schools in other cities or stuff
Oh,
like
like a
that.
college, like college maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Like
It's
18 or
like
so, you move.
no, around 15, 16.
Okay, yeah, so that would be like high school, yeah.
Yeah, and then I that's where the band came, because then you met people from around the areas, and then you started, finally find a drummer and stuff like that,
Okay. And did you do that for a while? Like when was bands the thing? Like at what point were you like, this is what I want to kind of do with myself? Like were those early bands, were you guys playing shows, or was it mainly just kind of for fun, like garage band stuff?
Again, we played some shows, but like we never played any. I think like the show, the longest sh like the show that was longest far away was like 2 hours in Haugesund. We never played
Wow.
a lot of shows at all. So it's like it was fairly a small setup. But I remember like from an early age, all I wanted to do was play in a rock punk band. But I never like I brought up the way that I never knew it was realistic. I never thought that would happen because my parents always been supportive, but they've always been like you can't have that as like you have
Yeah,
to
that's not
get
a
an
career.
education. Yeah, that's not a
Sure.
career. That will not happen to anybody. So I was always it always seemed unobtainable. So I never really I wanted to, but it was like a dream. Like I wanted to play as a striker for Liverpool as well. But
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's a dream,
So at what point is Bukasa like the first band that really, started to take off for you, and as far as like, you guys have put records out and signed and all of that stuff? Was this kind of the first band that really took you to the next level?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I hadn't actually been in a band for years, and because I got a bit like, yeah. I felt that all the bands that we're in, we never got anywhere, and so I haven't been in a band for years, and then I worked with this guy, like a friend of mine, who played bass, and we kind of to a certain degree liked some of the same stuff, and then I wanted to incorporate like kind of riffage from stone rock metal kind of thing with like more punky things, so basically what I enjoy, and he was kind of really into that as well. So that's how it started.
And it
So
just
yeah,
started with the
no.
two of you, just bass and guitar, and you were writing the songs and singing them without a drummer at that time.
I don't remember how quick we got Olav, our drummer. I think maybe we just me and him first, maybe one or two times just to check out, and I show the riffs and etc. And then I think I just remember he said he knew a guy, like he didn't actually know him, but he played with him in like a Eurovision cover band, like for fun, and so this guy came, Ola, and just remember we had like first rehearsal in like this god awful building that was it used to be a war bunker. There's a lot of those in
No
Norway,
way.
yeah.
Wow.
Since like we were occupied, so there's a lot of bunkers, and. At least I understand that is as well, and they just so, I don't know, somebody owned it and then took every room to like a rehearsal, but it's not like isolated, it's just concrete.
Walls in between the
Yeah,
rooms.
it sounds fucking awful. So we had the rehearsal there, and we haven't done anything because we didn't know about isolation, so it's just like playing there, so you couldn't talk. Like if another band was playing next to you just
You
had to
couldn't even
play
hear
good.
yourself.
Yeah, you couldn't hear yourself, so you just
Oh
had to
my
play louder.
gosh, that's so funny. And
I
were you
didn't
all
use protection for the ear either. It's just like an
just
idiot. I do it now, but I didn't then.
before? Yeah, just you leaving your ears are just ringing for days
Yeah,
on
because
end.
I thought I thought I had this idiotic theory that I didn't sing as good with like ear protection, but until like one week where I had like this. sound for 1 week. And I went to the doctor, and she was like, yeah, it sounds to me like, oh, not sounds, but it like looks to me like you have very loud noises for
A
a
long
good
period of
amount of
time.
time. Yeah. So after that, even when I go to a show, I wear like these
You're
things. So after that, I'm
that's
like,
smart.
hell no.
I don't need that ringing coming back for a week. Oh wow. So then you guys what played together for a while before you end up putting out that first album?
Yeah, I think I like the first years were fairly slow. I think like in 2015, two years after we started, we released an EP, and then 2 years after we released our debut album, Divide and Conquer, because we didn't stress like stuff, and we didn't really know how to do stuff either. But after that, after Divide and Conquer, then like our career kind of took speed, if that is an expression.
So like what, so you had the EP out, what, you're still kind of playing small locally, and then when you put out Divide and Conquer, how did that kind of like, was there a song or like somebody kind of found you? Like what kind of made that record? Were you getting press on it? Like what kind of took you guys? You said it started to speed up from there.
We released that album, and we got like real good press from like Metal Hammer, and but it didn't really, like no one in Norway, like Norwegian press, like I don't think they wrote one piece about it. So it went kind of slow, but then around December, I remember Metal Hammer had like this article about the like 11 best debuts of the year or something like that. They had like Prophets of Rage and a lot of like big
Wow.
name bands, and they also named us, and we were like, hell yeah. And then we like sent that out because I was like booking us, so I just sent that out to like a lot of Norwegian festivals, but like, look at this shit. And then
Yeah, look
all
at
of a
that
sudden,
notoriety. Like we're up here with Prophets of Rage and all these other gigantic artists and
and then we got some festival bits, and we were like, oh shit, like stuff started to happen. We got like a and a stereo festival in Trondheim, and then like I think January 2018, then the album has been out for like, we released it in March, I think, so it's been out for a lot of months. And then like Lars Ulrich of Metallica played us in his radio show like the first song, and just sang our praises and called us his favorite new band, and stuff kind of just rolled on from there. And then so after that, everybody were like, yeah, would you come play at our festival? We always liked you. And I like, you haven't heard about us before
Yeah, you
now.
just heard
But
Lars say something, right? I mean, to get that though, did you even know that that was coming, or was it like,
No,
wait, what? How did
like,
you find out that Lars was kind of co-signing your band and like praising you all?
it's like, I remember it really, really well because I believe I bought Far Cry on the Xbox. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, I'm gonna have like a good Sunday just gaming Far Cry. And then we had like a Twitter account just to have it, probably like 100 followers maybe. Like never used it. And then we got tagged and said Lars Ulrich tagged you. And I was like, probably just,
Some fake account.
Everybody calls themselves something like that, Hetfield
The
666 or something
official
like that.
Lars Ulrich or something like that.
No, so I went in and I said verified, but I was like, huh. And was just like, yeah, playing these artists on the show. So I texted the other guys, and they were like, probably this probably wrong band, because we basically it was just the three of us. We didn't ever had like any lot of Norwegian bands come through like a I can't, it's like Norway has something called NRK, which is like Norway's BBC, and they have like a TV and radio competition where bands can compete and win, and then they get like put together with manager, etc. We never were there, so we didn't like have any connections, so we didn't like expect our band to have any stuff like that. And then
Sorry,
it
go
kind
ahead.
of it, no and then it, and then basically it was us, and he played it as the first song he played last night, was a real massacre on his show, and he just sang our praises, and it was just like a surreal moment. And after that, it kind of, yeah, we kind of went viral, at least in Norway.
Yeah, I would imagine almost worldwide, right? I mean, to have the Metallica is one of the biggest bands of all time, and to have Lars be the guy to say, check these guys out. I'm sure you had American fans and, Canadian all over the world at that point have their eyes on you all as this band. Like, whoa, he thinks these guys are great. He said they're my favorite new artist. Like, was it just, yeah, I mean, I would
What I
imagine
did
it'd be
was,
outside of Norway as well.
because what I did is, like, since it was just the three of us, I just sent like an email. Just I tr try to get some addresses to, like, I don't know what they're called, like Metal Injection, Metal Hammer, Metal Sucks, etc., and Norwegian. So I just sent this email with just like, I just wrote like, Lars Ulrich names Bokassa a favorite new band or something like that, and a link.
Yeah.
And then we got shitloads of write-ups, and our profile kind of exploded, at least for like a couple of weeks. And we got some festival offers. We were like, hell yeah,
Yeah. And then to keep that momentum up, it was probably, something where you guys, going into the next album, like, okay, now we have all eyes on us. We got this amazing, co-sign from Lars, and going into, you ended up, was that on Crimson Riders? Was that song off that album, or is it still off Divide and Conquer, the one that he played?
Oh, that's actually from.
Or
I guess he played, or kind of what he did. I guess he played Last Night Was a Real Massacre, but he also talked a lot about a song called No Control of her EP. So it was never anything of Crimson. It was just Divide and from War and Everything. So Crimson Riders came afterwards.
okay. And so that came afterwards. And then was that like a, was now you have this eye, these eyes on you. Was that album like, were you all going into that like, oh, we got to bring it on this one? Or was it not even a thought? It was like, we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
I think it was keep doing what we're doing, because the fact was, like, we never had any, like, I wish we did, like, sometimes had like good guidance or people tell us
Like
you
man,
should
yeah,
do
people
this.
around you as far as like a management.
And we had, like, for a couple of years ago, but like at that point, after that initial thing, we didn't actually do anything. But then, like, in June of 2018, I think they called us and offered us a slot on their European tour.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. I mean, to open for Metallica, I mean, you must have been playing obviously stadium size venues at that point.
That whole tour, they played for 1.5 million people. They played on 25 stadiums. It was like Slane Castle with 80,000 capacity. It was like insane. And we barely played. Okay, I guess at that point we played some festivals, but there was never more than like 1,000
Yeah,
people
not
in
to
the
that
crowd.
caliber. I mean, I'm sure even going up onto a stadium stage would have been like, oh my gosh, like this is like unreal.
And still now, like, a couple of years ago, we did Hellfest, which is one of the biggest
Yeah, that's huge.
festivals, and we played main stage, and it still wasn't as big as those
A
stadiums.
Metallica show, sure. What
So
was that
it's
call like? Did Lars call you up and he's like, hey, this is Lars from Metallica?
like, no, it was like, it was Tony, one of their managers, and it
Okay.
was like a New York number. So I initially just hung up, because at least when I get like numbers that are not Norwegian, I just like I
Or just a
don't
number you don't
respond.
know, you're probably like, who
It's
the hell's
usually a
calling
scam
me?
call,
Right.
especially when it's like, So I just hung up. I think I hung up maybe twice, at least once. But then I got like a text, and where what it said, and then I just called it up, and I was like, I'm sorry. I
Yeah, you're like,
thought you were
sorry,
a
I thought this
scam
is a
call.
prank. Yeah, exactly.
And so I basically just I was I remember I was a bit drunk as well, because we had been outside watching the World Cup in football. Like, they had like big screens outside,
Oh,
and so I
yeah.
just basically sat on the couch and talked to this Metallica manager, who asked us about coming on tour with them in Europe, UK, and Russia for 25 dates, and it, like, kind of asked how much we needed. So I just said like a number, and then I quickly realized after I talked to him that that was really low.
They're like, of course, sure. That's a steal. Why
And
not?
I was kind of, a bit in awe, what's it called? Or like a bit afraid to just I don't want to fuck this up. So I texted him like, yeah, I think maybe we need some
A little
more
bit
because I've been,
more.
yeah. But
Been crunching
it
numbers
worked
here, and
out.
it's not going to work out.
Yeah, I've been crunching numbers.
Oh, wow. But I mean, to go on that tour, just getting that phone call, and you're all outside, you're watching the World Cup, are you calling your friend, or were the other guys in your band with you? And you're like, you're never going to, like, we're going to tour with Metallica. Like, this is the most insane phone call I've ever received.
And what I did, like, I called them on FaceTime, and I never used FaceTime before, I think. And I remember Olaf has talked about it afterwards. Like he was like, "Fuck, he's calling me on FaceTime." But
Is
I
something
just thought
wrong?
that if, yeah, because I just thought if I just text or something, it might seem like I'm joking. So I was just FaceTiming them, pretty much like, "What the fuck?" And then told them, and then I was like, "Just come over to my place," and we just had kind of like a pizza party and got drunk.
Oh, that's so cool. And then you do this tour, and I mean, wow, the what Lee, like getting off of that must obviously put you guys in front of so many people. And what was like out after that had happened, did you have a bunch of like labels and people, trying to contact you, managers, like who's this, there's this new band and they're opening for Metallica, like who are these guys?
Yeah, I mean, initially when the news broke in 2018, then we got like a booking agency called us both in Norway and in outside Norway, and we said yes to both of them. It beats me trying to book stuff, and then yeah, and then. Like since we didn't know, like going from playing maybe like 50 people if you're lucky,
So now
to
you're
of course we have
playing.
okay, we have played some festivals and some bigger shows, but it was not very big. And then to go to just seeing like 80,000, 60,000, 75,000, we don't know anything about it. So like one of the booking agents suggested that we might get a manager. And she knew like a couple people, so we had like meetings where they came over to Norway, kind of, and we went with one of them just because he was very experienced, and we thought this may help us because we don't know anything, and then he kind of sent out the new album, Crimson Riders, to like labels, and we got some offers, and we went with like a British label called Muka, which we are still friends with today. Actually, like we played in Brighton last year, and then the label manager came out and hung out. So they're a really cool label. It's like so it's really nice to be there. But it wasn't like very many offers. There were some, but then we of course had this label. We were under contract after that tour anyway. Yeah, so.
And then you've released the BBC Radio One live studio thing, and then that what you guys won like a Norwegian like the equivalent to what would be a Grammy in Norway, right?
Yeah, we got nominated
Or
for the like
nominated, still like what I mean, breakthrough artist of the year to be on that level at that point where your parents like seeing you in a stadium and doing this, like, oh, maybe this music thing, he can succeed at this.
My mom actually came. My father has never seen us live, but my mom came and saw us like playing Twickenham Stadium, so that was pretty cool. She also seen us support Judas Priest, so
Oh man.
I think she knows that we're an okay band now.
You're doing it. But
Yeah,
was
no,
that, I
so
mean, getting that nomination, what is massive.
yeah, we didn't have any clue, because I don't know how it is in the States, but like in Norway, rock music is kind of not in like it's not big. It's like pop and R&B and everything else. So we just and then like last year's like I guess Tropical House and stuff. So the fact that we get nominated with like a lot of those artists, we just like we were the odd one out, but we like We're like, hey, we'll take it.
Yeah, of course. Wow. And then on the following album too, you won an award for that one.
We got that. That was pretty cool because it's called Bendiksenprisen, and it's like the Norwegian artist's own
Wow.
award. So they it was kind of the artists that voted for us. That was also kind of like a we had didn't see it coming. It was an award because of our like the emphasis on our live performances, which was pretty cool. And they kind of because usually we had like a period that we just turned down a lot of like into your TV kind of thing in Norway because they were all like very tacky stuff. They just wanted us to do like goofy stuff, and we're like, no, this is not gonna look good in 10 years. Because I've seen other Norwegian rock bands do that novelty stuff, and it's still on YouTube, but it just looks stupid. So we just
This
said
looks
no.
cringy. Yeah, you're like,
Yeah, it's
Adam,
like
we don't need
extremely
to be
cringy.
on the online 10 years from now, like upset that we even did this.
Yeah, so we just turned down, but then so our agent, like our Norwegian booking agent, she had an idea when they were going to give us the price because she knew that we were just like turning down this stuff. But she kind of said, she said, okay, if you front us, ask them to review some hamburgers, like be like food
Oh.
for this website, and then they will say yes. So that basically what happened. We got contacted, and they were like, do you want to like review this hamburger place called Kvaneria, which is a great place for Godt.no, which is like a Norwegian food blog. And we were like, yes, of course we will. Like we were so pumped. So we went in there, and they gave us like the burgers, and we tasted, and they had like a camera team. So we're talking to the camera, and we're like, yeah, I prefer this kind of burger because blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, guy from Enslaved just comes with like a lot of beers, and we're like, what? And then they come with like an award. So they had like this whole stage stuff. So
Oh,
they,
wow. So that's how you got received the award. That's so cool.
never saw it coming. We just like didn't understand anything. And then we went live on TV2, which is like one of Norway's big news channels. So
Yeah.
it was very funny. They got us there. That was pretty
That's
cool.
amazing. And then the album did really well too. I mean, you were charting in Norway with it.
It was our best chart till this day, so that was nice.
That's awesome. And then you have the new album that you just released with some awesome, singer from Red Fang, Aaron, and then Sick of It All on there, their vocalist. So talk to me about going into this new album. I mean, it would be like post pandemic, and I'm obviously that did that play a part into the prior record, or had that album already been done with Molotov before the pandemic?
I mean, we recorded Molotov, I believe, around April, May 2020.
Oh, so
So,
like right
right
during
at,
it.
yeah. So, and I think that album, sonically and the vibe is kind of, it has that thing where you have been locked down like for a couple of months and then finally get to meet people again. And you're like, you're happy, and you have like this. That's the kind of vibe of that album, like the fun rock kind of, at least like sound wise. I think that probably like it went the other way around. I guess other people made more
Like darker
depressing album.
album. Yeah.
But I guess the vibe, since we are not like one of those bands that can use like a year in the studio, so we were just excited to be there in that short amount of time. And I think you can hear that on Molotov, whereas All Out of Dreams is a more like metallic, colder, maybe darker sounding record. And that is, of course, because that's kind of the vibe that I felt in those songs, but also because I think it's interesting with bands that have different sounding records. There's so many bands that just sounds the same, like sonically on their records. And I also, they usually just play the same song 10 times, you know,
Right. It's
like
like, okay,
what.
this worked once. Let's just re-release it on 15 upcoming albums.
And it works pretty good for them, but I can't do that, and I don't really want to do that. So it was a conscious decision to, for example, go for like the snare drum, a la like that 90s punk metal kind of thing with the ping and like more stripped down, not that much of oohs and ahs and not that much of percussion and effects. So it's more of an in your face kind of album. And also I wanted to make it faster because it was my first time like kind of producing on Molotov. Like, of course, a lot of Bo Casa releases like Divide and Conquer has just been the band producing, but this was when I was like very committed to doing it myself. And on Molotov I had like a kind of everything goes kind of thing. If it's fun, if I feel it serves the song, elevates it, makes it bigger, then we'll do it. But and since I've done that on Molotov, I thought I will try a different approach this time. I will strip it down. I will not, because I tend to think like every part, it's like, oh, I can put this on to make it even more catchy. I can do this. Like, which I did on Molotov. Like everything there is like just a bit, like some seconds then it's like an ooh, or like ah, like or something like that, or a lead or something like that. And the, All Other Dreams doesn't have that, so it's a much much. And I also felt some of the songs on Molotov that I could have turned up the BPM on, be a bit faster. So I did this on All Other Dreams, and I wanted a lot of the songs on Molotov are also around 4 minutes. I think that's too much. I like him around 3:30. So it's kind of stuff like that, I guess.
And like you, I mean, speeding it up, I'm sure helps with the
Yeah.
timing. I love the song. I love the title track. I mean, All Out of Dreams. The whole album is awesome, but that one, I love the hook and like, I love that you guys use like melodic hooks in the songs. Like that's what gets me with bands. I'm like, okay, this is cool. This is like kind of like an earworm that I can remember later. You know what I mean? It's got that kind of like stickiness to the chorus, I
Yeah.
guess.
Yeah, I mean that is really important to me because that's what I like as well, you know. I like a good chorus and like a good hook and melody and combined with the riffage. So I see a lot of like some people always seem to treat it like it's a bad thing. That's a negative thing that is catchy. Never understood that. If you even listen to like our first EP and Divide, it's still catchy. It's just like it's a more raw production, but to me it's always like it's a part of the song. I can't not write that way, you know. I see people writing these like, for example, Sleep have that like the Dope Smoker album was like I don't know 70 minutes, which is cool, but I can't write that way. For me, it's like get to the chorus kind of thing, you know.
More, yeah. And I like that in music and songs, like the bands that I've always grown up liking, where they had the big hooky choruses and the very melodic, and I really like that of your band.
I think it, like for me it's kind of it's not it's like it depends kind of on the song because sometimes you have a more hardcore vibe on some of them, but usually I kind of think if I can play it acoustically to a certain degree, like if I can sing it without relying on the other bands or like distortion, then it's a good song, you know.
Yeah, you hear that a
That's
lot. Like if you can take the acoustic guitar and play it like around a campfire and it still
yeah.
has that like, quality to it, it's gonna be a hit.
I think I like especially the title track is one of those kind of things that I could b just play acoustically. I haven't done it, but I could, you
You
know.
should. That'd be killer.
It can be like a B-side compilation.
You said that, going into Molotov, you didn't have you said that the band didn't really have like kind of, I don't know if there was what word to use, but like the luxury of, spending a year in the studio. With this new album, did you have a bit more time? Were you working on it for a longer period of time, or was it also done fairly fast?
I mean, what we did this time is like first I recorded at home, like basically right here in with GarageBand, and I kind of sing into the iPad. It's like the low, it's just to get like the backup vocals and my melodies. So, but I don't want to like disturb the neighbors. And then I play in the guitar and I have like I play on the bass thing and I do program the drums and then I send it to the guys. And then what we did this time, which we didn't on Molotov, we actually recorded a lot of them, not every one I think, but a lot of them in our rehearsal space just to get the vibe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and we brought those recordings to Denmark so that whenever we could, if ever we're like, how was that part? Then we could just listen to the recording. And some of those recording actually made it on the record as well. Because it was like, I think, yeah, it was in Olav of Dreams. There's a clean guitar that goes there. And I just couldn't get that clean guitar that good in Denmark. So we just fused some of it. So it's actually some of the rehearsal
Really?
takes
Rehearsal
are on
recordings
that
made it
song.
on that. Wow, that's
Yeah, there's
cool.
like a clean sound that sounded kind of like Guns N' Roses that we just couldn't copy in the studio, so we ended up using a lot of the cleans there.
That's cool. That is cool. You're doing a handful of shows coming up. I don't know, we could cut this out if you don't want to address it, but I know you guys lost your bass player re very recently. That must have been a pretty, tragic moment for the band, I would imagine.
Yeah, he told us in December. He sent us first like a long text, and then he sent us like a document where he has ri had written a long thing about his reasons, which we all understand. It was sad, of course, but people are different, and for him, I also think it was like, whereas maybe me and Olaf get like a lot of energy for being on stage, I guess for a fairly introvert person like Bård, it may have drained his energy some, and also when you have family and stuff like that. So we understand him completely, and we still saw him when at the signing of the new album and stuff like that. He also said that like if you guys have any issues with getting a new bass player, I can play some shows. So it was a fairly like soft transition, because we like after I think 2 or 3 weeks after he gave us a message, we started like, okay, maybe think about a new bass player. And like we had a friend of ours in mind that we played with earlier. One of his bands were supporting us on a tour some years ago, and he's a great vocalist. He's a great bass player. He's like a techie guy, which I like, because that means that he can like fix stuff, which I can't. And he's also like really like social guy. And so we asked him, and he was really into it. So we've been rehearsing with him ever since. And we were supposed to have his like debut show last Saturday, but I had like a back injury, so we had to
Oh,
cancel. So
man.
we still haven't played live with him.
Yeah, how's your back?
It's better than it was. I'm on a lot of painkillers now, but I walk. I try to walk a lot.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm ready for like the next Friday is the first show of the Norwegian tour. So I'm very committed to making
That's
that
awesome.
happen.
That's
Yeah.
exciting. And then the debut of your new bass player, that's huge.
Yeah, that'll be cool. That'll be cool. He also like, because I was really excited about him being like really good technical. So I had this I bought this old Yamaha SG from a guy, and he said I got it really cheap, but he said it was like original. But it sounded like shit, and we couldn't understand it. It was just some, and there was some old Epiphone pickups in it. So, but I had like a DeMarzio Dominion there, and I asked him like, "Could you fix this?" And he was like, "Boom!" So that's cool to have a guy who can go fix
Yeah.
your guitars.
Wow. Yeah. Oh
Yeah,
my
he builds
gosh.
his own basses and stuff, so he knows his shit. So I like that.
That's cool. That is cool. And then yeah, that's really exciting. Well, I appreciate your time, Jorn. Thank you so much, man, for doing this.
Thank you for having me, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, I have one more question for you before I let you go. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
My advice is like get extremely lucky and get a legendary drummer
to find you guys.
to find your band. No, but I guess what we did, we never took like I guess because we never came through all those like through all those places where you have like a lot of those sycophants that just tell you, oh, you're the greatest. Like, oh, if I use the word sycophant, right? But like those people that just like, yes, like you're so good. But we got like the opposite thing. So we were always, and we still are, we're always kind of like just ready to show them, you know? Whenever we go on stage, whenever we get booked to something, whenever we release something, we're gonna fucking show them, because everybody, like, they didn't have any faith in our band. So I think my advice would be like that: just go out there and just try to show everybody that, yeah, you can do it. I guess we have like this chronical imposter syndrome that we just feel like we have to always, you know,
Prove
show
yourself,
our
right?
worth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bringing it backwards.